Thank you. Yesterday, Ken Schiffer gave a marvelous review on out-of-second programs. As you probably noticed, that there was very little contribution from the U.S. side. One of the reasons is because we do not have a good CE phase stabilized laser, and you all know it is critical to have such a tool to produce out-of-second pulses. Now, 3 years after Ferenc Krauss group stabilized their laser in Kansas, now we try to stabilize our laser. Our laser is a little bit different, and I emphasize that this work is try to solve the problem stabilizing the phase of high-energy choke pulse application system. This is the difference between our work and the previous work. Of course, you know the so-called CE phase is the offset between the peak of the envelope and the carrier oscillation. If the phase is not stabilized, as you can see, the carrier just walks off from the envelope, and what we try to do, of course, to stabilize this. And this is the work of Ferenc Krauss and many other commercial systems that a lot of universities have these days. What you have is, of course, to produce intense laser pulses, you will need a CPA, choke pulse application. You start with a femtosecond time saffron oscillator. You stretch the pulse from femtosecond to picosecond, and then you amplify the pulse with another time saffron crystal. The gain is typically on the order of 1 million, and the stretching factor for the low energy, around 1 millijoule energy system, is few picosecond, less than 10 picosecond. The reason you have to stretch this is because you want to avoid damaging the nonlinearity in the amplifier. Jerome Roux will probably give a good review on the CPA, which was invented by him. And then finally, you compress this thing back to short pulses. In Ferenc's system, he used a piece of glass to stretch pulse. The bandwidth also is broad enough, so with like 10 centimeter glass, you probably can stretch to a few picosecond. And then you also use a prism pair that has a negative group velocity to dispersion to compress pulse back to femtosecond. To stabilize the phase of the amplifier pulses, you need to do two things. One, you have to stabilize the phase of the oscillator. Here, you're not really stabilizing the phase, rather you stabilize the phase variation, the speed of variation of the phase with respect to time. That you can do with what is called F2F interferometer that Ferenc Krauss described in his talk. So here you stabilize the oscillator, and then you also need another measurement that measures the phase of the amplifier pulses. Here you are measuring the phase, not the phase rate. Okay, and then you have to feedback this thing back to the locking electronic of the oscillator to compensate any phase shift in the amplifier. That was done in the past. It turns out that for such a system, the glass and this prism pair is not sensitive to, for example, to the pointing of this beam, and also to any vibrations of the table, all this kind of stuff. It's inherently stable than what we use, which is a grating-based system. Okay, so in most of the high-energy CPE system, high energy means probably energy more than 3 millijoules up to joules. Okay, in that case, stretching the pulse has to go even further, go to 100 picosecond or even nanosecond. So in that case, a piece of glass will not work anymore, and we have to use grating pairs. These two dark gratings are just a grating pair that was proposed by Tracy in 1969. Okay, in that case, if you shine a short pulse laser to one of the grating, it will diffract, of course. And then different paths, different wavelengths of the light will disperse in the grating in a different way. And by the time it gets out, you will have a chirp. Okay, this is compressed, but the stretcher works in a similar way. What we need to understand is to stabilize the CE phase, we need to remember that this grating pair introduces a CE phase offset. This CE phase offset from a grating pair is proportional to 2 pi divided by d, multiplied by the grating separation and this diffraction tangent of this diffraction angle. Okay, and intuitively you can think the CE phase is nothing but the number of grooves covered by the offset of this diffraction ray with respect to the normal of the first grating. So this distance S divide this is this part, G, this is this S, divided by the number of grooves multiplied by 2 pi. But for each groove, you have 2 pi C phase shift. So the number of grooves you have give you that number of C phase. And this factor 2 comes from the double pass configuration that every CPU has to use. Okay. In the past, people thought this grating is a disaster for CE phase stabilization because this total CE phase is huge. Therefore, if you have a small variation of the beam pointing on the grating, you are going to have a large CE phase variation, very change due to that pointing variation. And that later on turns out not to be a problem. It is because of this double pass configuration. When the beam changes direction, the reflected beam will actually cancel out that effect. So that pointing is not the issue. What we notice that is, since the gratings are not interferometrically stable, that means the separation of the grating always varies on the order of sub-wavelengths, and that change of G can actually also introduce a large phase drift, which can be easily described by this equation. Okay, and since this angle is not typical on the order of 30 degrees, so as you can see, when this variation is on the order of grating constant, the grating constant is typical on the order of 1 micron, then you will see a large phase drift. So this, we believe this is the biggest problem in a grating-based CPA system. Okay? And just this picture just illustrates the CPA system in our lab. And the other part is very similar to what Ferenc has, except here we replace a piece of glass with a pair of grating. We need to use a periscope to reverse the GVD, so the grating gives you a positive GVD and the compressor gives you a negative GVD. Okay. What we do now is first we try to control the separation of the grating to see if we can stabilize the phase. Okay. It's harder to move the grating, so instead we move one of the telescope mirror, which is equivalent to moving the grating, and we'll see if we can do the trick. The first thing we did is we apply a sinusoidal wave to this mirror to see how sensitive the CE phase is to the grating separation, and then we measure the CE phase on feedback control here. Okay, here now you see when we do the feedback control, we do not feedback control to the oscillator anymore, we just control the separation. Okay, here is how the CE phase is measured by this what is called F2F interferometer. When you have your amplifier pulse comes in, you just split a little bit of fraction of the pulse. You only need like 1 microjoule of pulse to measure the CE phase or the phase stability. You focus this 1 microjoule to a sapphire plate to produce a white light. And this white light has 2 components, a red component and a white component, which has a frequency difference of an octave. So what you do, you frequency double this. Okay, now you have 2 green light. And then they interfere. There is a delay between the red components and the green components because of dispersion of the sapphire plate we use to produce a white light. So when these 2 pulses interfere, you can actually get the CE phase or the stability of CE phase from this interferogram. So what I measure here, this is time, this is the wavelength. We measure this interference in frequency domain. This measurement of phase is very similar to Young's two-state experiment. When you have 2 states, if you change the phase of one of the beam, the fringe here will shift. So the principle is very similar. Okay, so if you do not stabilize the phase of the oscillator, you're not going to see any fringe because we actually integrate the measurement. So this is not a single shot measurement. So the fringe just smear out, you don't see anything. If you just lock the oscillator but not amplifier, you will see a kind of a slow drift. This is again time, and this is frequency. And if you do lock the amplifier by feedback controlling this grating, and then you can have a stable phase. Okay, and this graph shows how sensitive the grating separation, the C phase is to the grating separation. So if you if we do not apply any voltage on the PZT, on the grating separation, if we do not control the grating separation, we just lock the oscillator, you will see the fringe kind of drift because of the grating separation in the stretcher. If you apply a sinusoidal wave, if you drive the grating separation in a controlled fashion, then you see the CE phase also change sinusoidally. Okay, from this measurement, we show that if you have a 1 micrometer change of the grating separation, indeed the phase changed by pi to 2 pi. So we definitely prove that you need interferometrically stable grating or compressor to stabilize such CPA system. And I think this is a significant discovery. Okay. Well, now the question is, how long can you stabilize the phase? Okay, in our lab, this is one of the stabilized spectrum. We can actually stabilize for, 20 minutes, and the phase error is less than 200 milliradians. Okay, as I said, this one does not fade back to the oscillator. It just purely controls grating separation. And you can actually see the grating separation variation. It is indeed in a sub-micron regime. The interesting thing is now you can not only stabilize C phase, you can also control the C phase. You can preset the C phase and set your grating separation to lock phase to that value. So, for example, here the oscillator is locked, but the amplifier is not locked. And from this time, we just use this one as a reference of the CE phase. I must admit that this F2F interferometer does not measure the absolute phase. It just measures the relative phase. And suppose we choose this one as our reference, and we can log for minutes or so, and then if we decide to change the phase by half a pi for some experiment, we can actually do that. All we need to do is set program, change program set to that value, and you can see the grating actually changes its separation and goes to this phase. And the precision is actually quite good. You can change by a 0.1 pi, which is essentially the RMS value of the phase error. And so we believe now we not only have a new way to stabilize the phase of the grating-based CP, we can also control that, which I think is very convenient for C phase experiment. And another interesting we find is we can actually lock the CE phase for hours. This is like 2 hours of measurement of CE phase. And this phase, since this phase is interferometrically sensitive, if someone, for example, touch the table or something, you actually produce a CE phase spike there. But what we find is the interesting part is now the locking electronic can actually get it back. So even if someone knocked the table or just bumped the table or something, it can always get back to its original value for hours. And when you take the data, if you measure your results and measure CE phase at the same time, you can actually get rid of these large error bars and accumulate your data for hours. Okay, this phase is measured before the whole local fiber. It's just measured directly after compressor grating. And there's a question of whether the helical fiber, the compressed pulse, introduce another CE phase, and we also checked on that. So this is the helical fiber that we use. We can produce the laser pulse up to 4 millijoules, but the helical fiber cannot take that power yet. So now the limitation is this helical fiber, which we are working on now. Typically, we can get half to 1 millijoule of energy with pulse duration of 6 femtosecond, and this frog trace shows that you can indeed get such a short pulse. And we measured the phase of this pulse by using the phase meter invented by Gerhard Paulus, who actually built one for our lab. And you probably remember how this CE phase meter works. This is a true CE phase measurement. Of course, you heard from previous speakers, there is from Bandrock's talk that there's some kind of offset because of the Coulomb potential, whatever. But at least it can tell you if the phase is stabilized in a target. Okay, what we do here is we lock the amplifier for 10 minutes, and then we change this one. This plot shows And the photon energy, this is a time flight, of course, it's like photon electron energy. And this is time. And we measure the ratio of the left to right. And the red one means probably the Republican wins, the blue one means the Democrats wins, something like that. So here we change the phase by changing this wedge plate. Every minute we change, we flip by pi. And you can see there's indeed a periodicity here, which shows that the phase is locked in our system. I would probably see that this is the first convincing CE phase experiment that had been done in the U.S. I might be wrong, but.
So, John, why is it so? I had a couple of questions. So
yeah. Sure.
So just on this one. So, what's the? Obviously, we all want to have some you know real easy way to measure the relative phase. So one possibility is this kind of a setup. What contributes to the noise? It looks like if you really wanted to use this for quantitative measurement, I guess you would need to wait about 30 seconds per phase position to really get a good ratio between left and right. Why is it that noise?
Oh, you mean these spikes here?
Yeah.
I think there are several reasons for this. One problem is from the helical fiber to this setup, there are 6 meters of air. And this is actually in a different lab. So of course, there's a pressure difference between a laser lab and experimental lab. The air was not shielded for this. This was quick run. This is the first time when he brought his setup there and just tried to get things set up. We believe it's just because of the air pressure. You can do a calculation for if you propagate pulses in 6 meters, you only need less than 1% air pressure fluctuation to introduce a pi phase shift. Yeah. So this is, I think, the dominant factor. To do a good job, you have to really, shield that, yeah.
Another question is, how are you planning to get more than a half a millijoule out of the fiber?
Yeah, that's another good question. Let's see. One of the problem is to get a short pulse and a good spatial mode. And it's not easy. Right now we use argon gas, which has been developed in our lab, had proven to work in our lab for quite a while. But argon gas has a lower ionization potential. We are now changing to neon gas. With neon gas, we can get compressed pulse up to 1.2 millijoule at this time. We have not tried to push harder because we're afraid of damaging the optics at this time.
How long is the fiber?
The fiber is a meter.
1 meter.
Yeah.
So you know, Percy Keller and a bunch of other people who believe her are trying, like Lou DeMauro, for example, are trying this this fiberless filamentation method.
Yeah.
Have you experimented around with that at all?
Well, we have not tried that yet. As you probably noted, even in Keller's experiment, they did not get pulse energy larger than 1 millijoule at this time yet. And the pulse is not as clean as a pulse from a fiber. There's a lot of like pre-pulses, something like that, in his pulse, as I recall.
I'm also not sure that they even compressed it to this line.
They probably did. Yeah.
Two stages.
Yeah.
They
have two stages. Yeah.
Like
yeah. Yeah. I think it's promising. It's promising. But in that filament, again, you probably cannot arbitrarily dump as high energy as you want. I think at this time, they only get half a millijoule or ish.
What is a chirped mirror? Is that a moving mirror?
No, it's not moving mirror. Okay. So, the problem we have is, see, whenever we have a piece of glass in the window for the window of this of the, all the surface modulation, it produces a positive chirp at 0.8 micron, the central wavelength of laser, and then you need a negative chirp to compensate the positive chirp of the pulse, and for that you do a multi-layer coating on this mirror. In the standard multi-layer coating, you do not change the period of the coating, so each period is a quarter of the wavelength. But here, you actually change the period of the coating from short to long wavelengths. So therefore, the blue light bounces out first, and the red light bounces out later. And that of course, produce a chirp on the pulse, and it's called chirp mirror.
You're putting in circular or elliptical?
We tried both. For both circular and linear polarized light, we can get 6 femtoseconds. Okay. But with circular polarized, we find it's difficult to maintain the ideal circular light out of this. It is because the fiber is not ideally extra symmetric, so you always produce some ellipticity there. So later on, we always use achromatic quarter wave plate to change ellipticity. With circular polarized light, you produce more energy because the suppressed ionization.
Can I ask a question again about your signal in the stereo ATI? Because I didn't quite understand what I was looking at, and I wanted to make sure I understood. You have the integration time, or
1 minute.
The time is the same scale as the relative phase measurement on.
That's
the
right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So
it's 10 minutes.
That same 10 minute period.
Yeah.
And you're running with a kilohertz system?
This is kilohertz. This is kilohertz. Yeah.
So each one of these little horizontal bars is actually one laser shot?
No. I think it's still integrated. You mean, we do not see we don't have a resolution to see each laser shot. I think he actually integrated 180 laser shot to get one trace.
Okay. Well, each one is 119.
Yeah. This is a special designed CE phase, so he does not have a long time flight tube. He's a short time. So we cannot resolve the ATI peaks, but he can still see the asymmetry. But somehow he did some trick to allow us to measure the phase every 100 or 200 pulses.
Okay, so it's not a single shot.
It's not a single shot. He can still cannot do
this. This is what I was arguing, that the advantage of the harmonic method is that you can make a single shot.
I agree with you. I would say that from my experience, this thing is indeed easy to use. I mean, he built this one. He was there only for 4 days, and this is a brand new setup, and we were able to get it going and get the result, which was a little bit faster than expected. Of course, it cannot measure single shot, but it needs less laser energy than will produce high harmonics. Obviously, you know, maybe if we integrate this long for harmonic, we can also beat this. But this is still a good instrumentation, in my opinion.
So this is based on the recollision electrons.
This is recollision electrons. Well, this is he actually has an electrode that repels the low energy electrons. He only look at the high energy electrons.
So that's why it takes so long.
Yes.
Not so likely to recollide and scatter.
Yeah.
In the angles that you see.
And also another thing is if you put a lot of electrons in one laser shot, the space charge effects is going to dominate. It's going to destroy the time flight probably.
Not matter so much if you're looking only at the
asymmetry. I don't know. He tried to put a little bit more laser energy, and he claimed he saw a saturation effect, which I don't really understand what he means. Yes?
I still don't understand the spectrum on the right hand side, because you have stabilized the phase to some value, right?
Yeah.
And you see changes in the spectrum.
Oh, he changed. He used this wedge plate to change the C phase.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So if no first question, I would just summarize this part of work. I mean, this is people in the past, like here in Kapteyn's group, has showed that if you stabilize oscillator phase of his laser, his amplifier phase only has a slow drift. But in that case, the phase of the amplifier was not locked like what he did here. I mean, we think this is important for work like Johnny's and others doing. If you want to do this relativistic intensity out of second generation, or if you wanted to have several lasers from the same source, and this provide a way to control the phase of each amplifier, I think it really allow us to scale the energy of the C phase experiment. Yeah.
You mentioned the propagation distance from the compressor or from the hollow fiber to your experiment.
Yeah.
But any of the distances, air pressure throughout your entire system, creates a carrier envelope phase issue.
Yep.
And so what you're really showing us here is once the system is stabilized to, say, the 10 or 50 millisecond time scale, you're showing us a way to capture a specific carrier envelope phase, regardless of all the other variations in the system, whether they be vibrations of the gratings or changes in air pressure or anything else that might vary on the tens of millisecond time scale.
I agree with you. So since we measure the CE phase here, we don't really know all the contributions of CE phase error. We actually also compensate some slow phase drift of the oscillator. Obviously, it is not does not have a long-term phase stability either.
You have an intermediate control. You need the oscillator control to invoke the later control.
This CE phase measurement does not have the bandwidth of the oscillator. This thing cannot do the whole job. We need to set the phase of the oscillator to the range that this thing can work with.
Sorry to ask questions and disturb the flow, but
no problem.
This is a really stupid, dumb question. I should really ask it later. I just want to understand the optical arrangement and the structure, because I don't understand.
Yeah, so the beam comes out to the first grating, it dispersed. This is the first telescope mirror, and then it gets to the second mirror.
Okay, so it goes underneath all.
Underneath, okay. Yeah, and then it goes to this retro mirror and comes back. Yeah.
Can you remind me what Krauss does to compensate? I mean, he does F2F on the slow amplified arm, but then what? He doesn't feed back to a mirror like that.
No. Yeah, let me just explain to you. Okay, so what he does is he sends this error signal back to the oscillator. He changed the offset frequency.
In a different band, in a different electronic.
Yeah, this thing has two channels.
A slow and a fast.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess I convince you now in the U.S. we can also lock the phase of our laser. So hopefully we can do some nice C phase work out of second generation. Actually, our work, our quest of out of second generation was started before we stabilized laser. And we were working on the so-called polarization gating that was proposed by Paul Holcomb in 1994. As you know, Ferenc Krauss work is based upon the proposal put out by Christophe, Henri Capitaine, and Marguerite Marin in 1996. That was by spectrum filtering the cutoff harmonics. We were working on this polarization gating because we want to work on pulses that are shorter than this scheme. This one will allow us to produce out of second from the plateau, not just from the cutoff. So that's what we have been working on for quite a while. Let me explain what polarization gating is. As you all know now, from the three-step model, we can understand that if you change electricity of your driving laser pulse, the harmonic efficiency will drop. That is because the transverse component of electric field would displace electrons and prevent it from returning to the ground state. And I would say this is a universal behavior. You know, if you do things on molecules, you can also see the similar behavior. But the because of the orbital difference of molecules, there is some slight difference. But overall, if you change the C phase, if it's by 10, which means this component is 10% of that one, and then the efficiency would almost drop by order of magnitude. So this is a very effective Pockel cell for selecting out of second pulses from pulse stream. The question is, how do you actually do the polarization gating? As we know, if you just use long driving pulse or even several cycle pulses you produce out of second pulse stream, we only will select one of the pulse from the chain. And the polarization gating proposed by Paul Holcomb and others is to use a laser pulse that has a time-dependent ellipticity. That is to say, you have in a leading edge, you have a circle polarized light, and only in the middle part of the envelope, you have a linear polarized light. And then you have a counter-rotating circle polarized light again. The way to produce such pulses was proposed by those two Russian scientists. And they are saying that the easiest way to do this is to use the same color pulses, not green and red, just use 800 nanometer pulses. If you just produce two circular polarized light and delay them by a certain time and superimpose them, you automatically get this. this is a little bit easier than what Paul originally proposed, which was using two different colors. But now, I guess, with the new laser, we can probably do Paul's original idea. But using same color, I know the first time I saw was this paper. When I saw this, I thought, now I have a chance, because I know how to produce circular polarized light, I know how to delay them, and I know how to produce harmonics. So I was hoping to see an auto thing and pulse. The first question I ask myself is, how short do I have to produce this circular polarized light, and what kind of delay do I need to put there? Okay, I'm an experimentalist, but sometimes I can get some equations. This equation I got, this one shows that how the harmonic, the ellipticity of the laser pulse varies with time when you change laser pulse duration and the delay between the two pulses. It turns out this, of course, to produce a polarization gate, we need to use linear polarizer. Let's say defined polarization gate is ellipticity less than 0.2. Let's call that a linear polarized light. Then if you have that counter, that kind of polarization dependent pulses, this polarization gate width can be shorter than half of laser cycle, which is conditioned to select one of the emissions, on the second emission, is to choose, see, 8 femtosecond and of pulse duration and 15 femtosecond of delay. Okay, you want to choose shorter pulses. I mean, the shorter the better, because the short pulse allow you to suppress the ionization from the leading edge. But of course, we know we cannot easily produce pulses less than 5 femtoseconds. So that's the limit. This equation convinced me that we should go to the shortest pulse, which is different from other people's opinion at that time. This was in 2003. The paper was published in 2004. At that time, people believe you do not need short pulse. They say, if you increase this TD, you will get this short gate. But I understood that was not true. They overlooked the ionization problem, the depletion of the ground state problem. So we were really driving to produce the short pulse, and the way to do that, of course, was to use the holographic fiber that I explained later. And to produce the circular polarized light, the two circular polarized light, came out was to use a quartz plate. A quartz plate, of course, is a bifringent material. It has two different in-depth axes. That says the group velocity is different if you split the polarization into two components, and that two group velocity difference give you a delay between the two linear polarized light, two orthogonal linear polarized light. And then if you combine this one with a quarter wave plate, you get a left and right circular polarized light, and in the middle you got linear polarized light. Yes.
So last week Eric Mabel gave us, last week we saw the French group give their talk, and
yep,
they've done this in collaboration with the Italians. Sort of, I mean, because it's confusing for a theorist how they were doing and what you're doing. Could you briefly compare,
sure,
and contrast what the two teams are?
Well, it's a very interesting story. So they also, Eric Constant has been working on this for a long time, since he was a student of Paul Qualcomm.
Yeah.
But they were always using long pulses, pulses longer than few cycles, longer than 10 seconds.
I understand that. I just mean, we saw a working experiment last week.
And yeah.
You had this. What is the difference between those? I'm not asking.
Oh, okay. No, it's very similar. Now, the work is very similar. I just go back to history and try to explain why do I need that C-phase stabilizer and what we can do with that phase stabilizer laser. Otherwise, yeah, this work is very similar to what the French and the Italian group has been done.
Okay.
But now I just try to give a review of the history.
No, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything.
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay,
but it's interesting that probably at the same time, Eric also came out with exactly the same idea, except they are using a quarter wave plate here instead of quartz plate. But the idea is very similar. This kind of thing allow you to produce these pulses. And the whole experiment setup looks like this. You have a laser and a holographic fiber, and then you have this polarization optics, and then you're simply focusing this light and look at the spectrum. We were hoping to see the harmonic orders become a continuum when we select one of the pulse. Okay, this is the setup that we use. One of the difference between our work and their work is we actually measure the number of photons that can be produced from such a system. Okay, we think this is important because for any application you need to know the photon numbers. Okay, and the number was measured by inserting a mirror and measure the photon number by counting electrons on a channel plate. We also put an X-ray photodiode. The results are very similar. Okay, this is one of the early results that we observed. What we did, we changed, again, a glass plate to change the pulse duration. When the pulse duration is long, you do not have a very good polarization gating. You still have see the high harmonic generation, but when the pulse is getting shorter, now each of the harmonic peak become smeared. This is very similar to analogy of multi-state interference and two-state experiment and one-state diffraction. Okay, and if the glass is too thick, the pulse getting longer again, and then it become a harmonic. This is the first time that someone actually saw a continuum generation from this polarization gating. In the past, they always saw harmonics, and they see the pulse getting shorter and shorter, but it's still a pulse train. It's not a continuum.
What's the spatial shear on the 3.3 millimeter?
That's a good question. We never figure out. This spectrometer is just like yours. It has the angular resolution. We never figure out why it got this sharing.
This is without stabilization.
This was without stabilization. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going back to history.
Yeah. In answer to Ken's question, you started to say that Eric Constant initially started with long pulses.
Yeah.
Could you explain why he...
Because he did not have short pulse, I believe.
Yeah.
And also...
No, but I mean...
and also, because for a while, people do not believe that you need short pulse.
Yeah.
Okay, as I explained...
But the point of why you need short pulse.
The reason is, if you have that pulses with... Okay, so you produce harmonics here, but you ionize your gas there. So leading with this one, the circular part of the light, the E field is compared to this linear part of the light. So it's actually very effective in terms of ionizing atoms. If you do not have a short pulse, you're going to deplete your ground state.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's the disadvantage of the wave plate approach. Mm-hmm. There are other ways to make it.
Really yeah. So that's right.
The wave plate approach is passive and very simple.
Yeah.
But it has a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Just the structure of the pulse tends at a minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. He's absolutely right. I mean, but at that time, this was the only thing that I believe that can actually work. But now with OPCPA, with phase stabilization, you can actually combining two wavelengths. That all that become of course a lot easier. But back then, this was 2003, and it was not possible at that time.
Will combination of two wavelengths do any better than this? You still need the short pulse to avoid ionization.
Not necessarily. If you look at Steve Leone's paper, what they said is if you combine fundamental with second harmonic, the second harmonic actually disturbs the trajectory of the fundamental. So you don't really need a large second harmonic component to suppress the other trajectories. Mm-hmm. I still have to see the result because somehow when I look at that data, they always have some pre-pulse or something that was not completely suppressed. It's not still not as if, in terms of producing clean out of second pulse, I still think right now this is still the best way. I mean, and the price you pay, as he said, is this. But back then, I think we were the first one we actually pointed out this problem and pointed out that we need to use short driving pulse for this. Okay? And of course, if you do a naive Fourier transform of this kind of spectrum, you can produce pulses shorter than 200 nanoseconds. I mean, we all know the phase, the spectrum phase is not flat, and we have a problem here. But this just shows that we can produce at least a continuum that is broader than what the cutoff can give you. And we also did the same thing. This was done with argon gas, with neon gas. You can get even broader spectrum. Of course, you lose efficiency because neon is less efficient. Because at that time, we would not be able to measure this out of second pulse, and we did some calculation. I mean, we experimentally run out ideas, we also do theory. It turns out that for harmonic generation, there are theories that are easy enough so we experimentalists can actually manipulate on a single PC. Let's look at the geometry of our experiment setup, which is a laser beam, and typically our laser gas is about a millimeter long. And this is the relay range. We typically set our guess cell after the focus to select the short trajectory. And to calculate the spectrum or the pulse out there, we need to do two things. One is to calculate the single atom response to the laser field. And there we use the semi-analytic model developed by Levenstein. And then we propagate this one using the Maxwell equation.
You made a comment that your gas is off-center?
Yeah.
In order to select the short
trajectory.
Why is that?
That's a good question. This is because of the intrinsic phase of the dipole depend upon the intensity of the laser. Okay, here the laser intensity drops, therefore the dipole phase also changes with Z. Okay, in a plasma, when you produce harmonics, you produce plasma. In a plasma, you have a phase matching problem. Also, the orbital, sorry, come back to your question. The different orbital short trajectory and the long trajectory has different dependence on the intensity. So therefore, when the intensity variation here is just right for phase matching, the short trajectory is not right for the long trajectory. That's why we always put this one behind the jet. Okay, well here, yes.
Do you see the long trajectory if you put it somewhere else?
That's a good question. We have not worked on this, but the Italian group did. They actually look at the long trajectory using a CE phase stabilized laser. They can actually see the single shot spectrum or even stabilized spectrum in the overlapping region of the two harmonics.
The group in Korea, Nam, also now is able to control the long trajectory.
Yeah, so we have not
been. Measure it.
Oh, that's right.
Measure time.
Yeah, I remember that.
And most of the energy is there, so you experimentally should grab it. I mean, 80% of the energy intensity is in the long trajectory, and I don't understand why you throw it away.
Okay, that's a good question. But anyway, we never, this is not our interest. Okay, so let me just go back to the model. Maybe some of the theorists are interested in this, and then see how we experimentalists work on. So we use the Levenstein model to calculate the time-dependent dipole moment. And in this model, calculate this one just using a single integral. And it has the nice explanation connection to the three-step model. So here you have a laser field and the dipole matrix element that describes the ionization process. And then you have the phase accumulated by the electron in the laser field, and here is that this one gives you that dipole phase. And then you also have some quantum diffusion here, and recombination. This is another dipole matrix which gives you that recombination. I would say after the talk discussion yesterday, I'm now a little bit confused because we always use this one, use the ground state. This dipole moment, dipole matrix is the matrix from the continuum state to the ground state. Now you are telling me that maybe it's not back to the ground state, it's doing some complicated state or something like that. So the question is, what should we use here from now on? All right. So anyway.
But you're using a velocity gauge.
I'm using a velocity gauge. Does that matter?
I mean, it's a strong field approximation. It's much better to use the length gauge.
To use length gauge, what? I'm not a gauge guy. This is what Levenstein developed, and it's just simple enough for me to use. Okay. Another nice thing about this is Levenstein also give us an analytic equation of these two of the dipole transition matrix, but only for S electron. Okay, we are working with argon. That's another question. I don't know how to deal with that. How do we actually get an analytical dipole transition matrix of argon gas, the true argon gas, to give you the Cooper minimum, all this kind of stuff?
But there isn't.
It
doesn't exist in analytical.
Maybe some kind of semi-analytical something. You mean empiric? I don't know. That will really allow us to do the true calculation I can compare with the experiment. I mean, now, for argon gas, I mean, this equation cannot give you the Cooper minimum. So qualitatively, we cannot even compare the profile of the harmonic spectrum, because this is from S electron, right? But nevertheless, This is simple enough for us to do the calculation. We can calculate the dipole moment for each point of the gas for each time, and then we do a Fourier transform this one, put this one in the Maxwell equation, and calculate the harmonic field. And this is simple enough for me to work with, and the time is also not very consuming. What does the theory tell us? If you have a short pulse, 5 seconds delayed by 5, if you fix CE phase with certain intensity, with I think this one was argon, helium and gas, if you just do a single atom calculation, you will not actually get a single harmonics, a single pulse. You actually get two pulses. These two pulses interfere, and since we are seeing this in frequency domain, you see the interference pattern of the two pulses. And indeed, if you do 3D, put your gas at the proper position, you get rid of one trajectory, you get a continuum. Okay, so that's the theory tells us. The theory also tells us that the phase...
I don't understand. I mean, you say the difference between single atom and 3D. I mean, these are two different things, apples and oranges.
Oh, this 3D is not the three-dimensional single atom surface chemistry. This is a propagation. The 3D is propagation.
Oh, I see.
Sorry.
So single atom and then with...
Then propagation. With propagation. Without propagation, this with propagation. This tells us that we have to do a propagation to understand what is going on, at least in our lab. Yes?
No, I'm confused. Your single atom spectrum comes out of the 5 femtosecond pulse, yes?
It's a deliberately polarized pulse. So each of the circular polarized light is 5 seconds. The delay is also 5 femtoseconds.
So what is the time that the linear polarization lasts?
The linear polarization is less than half of a cycle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did your harmonics get their recognizable width?
What do you mean?
Well, I see oscillations there that look to be spaced by... What's the spacing there?
The spacing here is half a cycle.
Somewhere earlier than that.
Here?
Yeah.
This is because of a chirp. Because of a chirp of the pulse. The spacing between two pulses changed with energy.
And so the spacing in those peaks is what?
The spacing of the peaks is
back further, where your arrow
is. It's path 1, path 2 interference, right? That's what you're saying.
This is path 1, path 2. Yeah, the two paths interference.
Interference.
The long trajectory and short trajectory.
There's a single cycle with two different places where field ionization can cause return at a particular energy.
Correct, yeah.
And so do the fringes there make sense for that?
The fringes here does make sense, yeah. Actually, I also Fourier transform this one back to time domain. You can actually see the two pulses and they are along the two chair. I think I have slides over there to show that.
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
What's the thing on the left?
On the left, it just explains the two trajectories.
Oh, I see. That's time for one cycle.
Yeah. So this in one cycle, you have this is a cutoff. This is a two.
This is sort of a commerce frame.
That's right. Yeah, you have. Well, I will go there later on. So what we worried about is since the pulse is chirped, can we actually compress the pulse of this? So we need to calculate if the phase variation depend upon the radius of the inside the gas jet. So here we calculate, we find out the pulse is almost of the pulse is actually linearly chirped. If you just choose a short trajectory, it's linearly chirped. So the phase is quadratic. But this phase variation does not depend much on the radius inside the gas jet. This is good news. This says if we have a negative GVD material, we can actually compensate this chirp to get short pulse. Okay, and again, this one explains the two trajectory in this KH frame. This frame is is what I like to use in this little counterintuitive. So here we allow the ions oscillating with laser field. So ion just follow the laser field, and then now the electron just travel in straight lines, and then the crossing point give you the return time. Yeah.
This amplitude is what?
This is the ion trajectory.
In space.
In space, yeah.
Okay.
And
so
this is
the oscillation about the origin.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And this one, and the good thing is here you can easily figure out when do these return. I mean, for each ionization time, you just draw a line that is tangent to the ionization time, and then the intersecting point is return time. It's the easy way to figure out where does it return. Okay. And it also explains you the chirp, because different return time has different return time. That gives you the chirp.
So is there a result about the independence, nearly near independence on radius, also true for the long trajectory?
I have not done that. I mean, in my calculation, I just did the short trajectory. So anyway, just explain that the chirp, that means the point when the WPAC comes back, it has a chirp. And this is, to answer your question, I just do the Fourier transform of this single atom electron and see if it agree with the short long trajectory, and I mean, it does. And this is one of them is classic, the solid line is classic, assuming it's just linear polarized light, and the other one is from the Weinstein model. The two does agree well. So this says we can understand the efficiently polarized pulses in a similar way as a linear polarized light when considering chirp or this kind of distance.
So you say tau 1, tau 2 is quantum. How'd you do that?
This one, I just Fourier put a window,
okay,
and then Fourier transform back.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So now, if we put a metal filter, I think in this case a tin filter, and this filter has a transmission over a certain wavelength, and it also has a negative GVD. So this is the phase of the filter. Okay. So the filter automatically selects a certain wavelength range, and the phase kind of looks like the phase of the harmonics. And if you do that, you can actually get a sub 100 femtosecond, at least theoretically. Okay, this was also published. But this one tells us we probably do not need a lot of fancy trick to get pulses shorter than 100 femtosecond. And probably just like Paul mentioned yesterday, it's just how we get it working and we measure this. And now I'll come back to the CE phase thing. Question? No?
So where is your experiment now? I mean, can you get the pulses yet?
Oh, okay. Do I have time?
You're coming to it.
Okay. All right. So here we explain the latest result we get. the first thing we're looking into is the CE phase effect. We want to know if indeed at that time, we want to know if the CE phase is indeed affect the polarization gating. And theoretically, it should. Okay. If now we have to redefine the carrier envelope phase, because now the phase is not actually doesn't matter where the envelope is, because you have to define which one envelope we're talking about. Here, I just plot the two components of the E field, one in one plane and the dotted one is in another plane. And I think what we should really define is the phase at the polarization within the polarization gate, or with respect to the polarization zero, or linear polarized light. That's the phase we care about. And this shows the phase is zero, and this is 90 degree. So here we can just focus on one of the E field we call the driving field, the black one. The other one can be considered as the gating field. So the driving field is more or less like the one we normally use to produce harmonic. And this one, just the dotted one, just destroys the harmonic generation. And it is the phase of this driving pulse with respect to the electricity zero that matters. Okay? And we at least theoretically find something interesting. Okay. So it turns out when you see a cosine pulse, for polarization gating, you will actually produce two returns. So in other words, you produce two pulses. Where if you have a sine pulse, you have one return. This is just opposite to the case when you have a linear polarized light. And this is, I think it would be very interesting to check this somehow in future. And in time domain, if you set the phase to a cosine pulse, you actually have, in spectral domain, you have a modulation, and with a sine pulse, you have almost a continuum. And in time domain, you have two pulses, and then one pulse if the phase is pi over 2. Okay, now come to the experiment. At that time, since we did not have stabilized phase, we wanted to check the phase on single shot basis. We want to measure the phase of the spectrum for one each shot to see if it changed from continuum to harmonics. And to do that, we need to measure the number of photons. This again is geometry. And we need to increase the number of photons, we play the pressure of the gas jet. And at least at the low pressure region, you can see this kind of parabolic increasing behavior. That is because the intensity is proportional to n squared, number of atoms squared. That's why you got this quadratic behavior. If you increase the gas pressure even further, you see this interference effect, which is because the interaction length is longer than coherent length. Okay, so here is more or less the maximum gas we can produce, we can use. And this is the spectrum. If we do not use polarization gating, just use a 6 femtosecond pulse, we get harmonics, but they are broad harmonics because the pulse duration is short. If you gate and integrate, you've got a nice continuum, looks beautiful, but it's not single shot yet. Okay, and then we also measure divergence of the harmonics, which of course depend upon your focusing geometry, but our geometry is not much different from others, and we find it's on the order of fewer millimeters.
What do you mean by divergence?
Divergence, the harmonic, the auto second pulse came out from the jet is not a collimated beam, it's diverging from the source. And we need to know this divergence angle in order to design optics for focusing this.
Is it relative to the axis of your two lasers?
This is...
Is it a cone?
This...
You've seen the grid lines from the tin filter, right?
This is from filter, that's right, yeah. It's almost like a Gaussian. This is a Gaussian profile. Mm-hmm. If you integrate over a certain... Yeah. So it's like a Gaussian beam.
Okay, but if you have these two lasers, circular polarizers coming in...
They're not counter-propagating. They're co-propagating. But counter-rotating.
And so they become linear
in some
transverse direction.
That's right. Yeah. Which is not controlled here if you don't control the C phase.
So
yeah.
What does your zero mean?
Oh, this is the divergence angle. This is just the optic axis of this Gaussian beam. This is the intensity, not the E field. So the intensity distribution is like a Gaussian along an axis. That's just like a laser beam. Your intensity will drop if you...
But I mean, is this the divergence of the harmonics?
This is harmonics, yeah.
Okay, so then the harmonics are produced by the linearly polarized light that's perpendicular to your co-propagating beams.
Yeah, the polarization is, but propagation direction is the same as laser.
Okay.
All right, okay.
You can focus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and back to your question, I mean, no one has measured this divergence of the polarization gating. No one has measured photon number. That's the new of this work. So, anyway, the photon number is 10,000 per laser shot. It's not as high as we wish, but we believe that when we get more laser energy out of the hollow core fiber, we can loosely focus the laser beam. Then we have a chance to increase this number.
What's the F number of your focusing object?
The F number is about 100. Yeah.
So your harmonics are significantly inside the divergence of the...
Yes, it's much smaller. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So you will increase this to what?
Well, to increase this, we have to do a few things. The first thing is to increase the driving laser energy. Okay, and if you can make the pulse even shorter, then we can also make the phase matching better. Okay.
Would you like to call in a number?
Would I call a number if I can? I think there is some belief that somehow the photon number scale not linear with laser energy because the phase matching condition get improved with those folks. I cannot give you a number, fortunately. I mean, that's a challenge for theorists. Because I can, even theoretically, I cannot calculate how many number of photons I can get, because I do not know the dipole matrix element, I do not know the absolute dipole matrix element. I mean, the other thing, the propagation element, I know. But it's hard to use the Schrodinger equation, because then the calculation would be, you know, almost hopeless.
Is this 10 to the 4 per shot per harmonic order, or just 10 to the 4 in total in the whole spectrum?
The continuum, yeah. The whole continuum.
The whole continuum.
Yeah.
It seems a very low number.
It is.
It's like 0.01 of the picojoule.
That's right.
Very small
compared to the linear polarized case. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's back to the question, the comment he has. The polarization gating does pay the price.
On the other hand, it's comparable to the number of X-rays that get in the slicing source at the ALS.
And they're 200 per second long, so that's right. So this is a lot better.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And
the Italians do considerably better. Do you remember what they get? They also quote a number.
I don't. Yeah, it'd be good to know.
I think it was 10 to 6, but maybe more.
10 to 6? Yeah, so maybe.
It was a lot higher.
Yeah.
And you're measuring electrons here?
Photon.
So you're measuring the photons directly?
Yeah, we have measured in two different ways, use a photodiode and use a microchannel plate.
And they were using some kind of calibrated photodiode?
Yeah, but that's what when I see X-ray photodiode, I mean calibrate photodiode.
I was just wondering, I mean, because I agree with Paul, I think the number they quote is about a factor of 100 higher, and I just wonder,
yeah.
The experiments are just not that different.
Your number is based on theoretical estimates?
No, this is true measurement, yeah.
But you're going through this filter.
Yes, it does go through this filter.
That attenuates a lot.
I don't know, do they? Typically, otherwise you have low order harmonics, that kind of stuff, also, if you don't use filter. I mean, produce third harmonics. Yeah, so
you
I think they also...
I don't think you can expect more help from the dipole.
I won't see that. I think what is his name? Sandra, in Los Alamos. He did some calculation,
yeah.
And he showed that different model give you order magnitude difference.
Different what?
Order magnitude in terms of yield, harmonic yield.
Models.
Yeah.
Different models of
the dipole. What kind of dipole matrix you use or whatever. He actually compare. Yeah. Schrodinger equation with Levenstein model, and he found Sandra, what is his name? Robin Sandra, yes. He published.
Argonne
Lab. Yeah, he published a paper on the three-step model. He used he said the multi-electron effect somehow correct this thing by a lot, by all magnitude.
The dipole moment.
Yeah.
I understand that. I mean, you have a single active electron process.
Uh-huh.
So this was the other electrons, of course, can modify that a little bit, but I don't believe that you don't have a collective. You don't have a collective participation of the other electrons. This whole thing is a single active electron process. That's why it works.
But I think from what his paper says, you have to take into account the multi-electron effect. The single electron will give you an object that is way off. He's published a PIL. I think it was last year.
What you're referring to is just the comparison of different gauges that he did.
Okay, so gauge matters.
Gauge is a number.
The conclusion is not that there's leverage there. The conclusion was that one gauge is trustworthy and the other is not.
And the gauge is trustworthy should be the length gauge.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I didn't hear you, Ken.
The
conclusion of that paper had comparison of calculating Schoenfeld approximation in different gauges, and the conclusion was that the length gauge was more trustworthy. This large difference in the way we can calculate was sort of taken as proof that we're going to get the same thing.
All right.
The point is, it's not a multi-electron effect.
That's right.
Paper. Yeah.
No, it's just a comparison.
Okay. Yeah, but you might be right. And I'm not a gauge person, as I said.
Can you continue this gauge
person? Okay. So anyway, and then the photon number is small, but it's sufficient to allow us to see some signature of the CE phase effect. So this compares two single shot spectrum. One give you a continuum, one give you the harmonics. So this says the CE phase indeed affect the spectrum. And I here I also have a movie that shows how the single spectrum varies from shot to shot.
That's impressive. So the pointing stability is really terrible too.
Yeah. Pointing of the harmonics, yeah.
If you try to hit a target, it's going to... I mean,
yeah. But anyway, I think this is, again, probably the... I haven't seen another result that shows a single shot from this polarization gating, the single shot variation of the spectrum. But John, of course, showed the harmonics from, for not from gating, from data polarized light. And
real quickly,
yeah.
What Phil just mentioned, the pointing stability isn't so good.
Uh-huh.
Previously, you showed us a measurement of the beam size.
Yeah.
Was that an averaged measurement?
That was average. That was average measurement. No, no, it's not
so
a single
the
shot.
The actual divergence of the beam on any given shot.
Maybe smaller. Yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So now we think that single shot measurement is interesting because if we can get another 100 photons per shot or something, if we improve the signal noise ratio, then we can probably from the measured spectrum to get the CE phase. And that is, of course, interesting because then it will allow us to measure the phase of a laser without stabilizing laser. We can use an unstabilized laser to do CE phase experiment. So that's why I think it's interesting. Okay, we also did some experiment on correlating the CE phase measurement of the single F2F interferometer and the harmonic spectrum. Okay, so if you do not lock the amplifier, just lock the oscillator, the phase still drift, and the harmonic spectrum also varies. This is not a single shot. This is so integrated over 50 shots because now the oscillator is locked. But still, when this one drifts, this one also drifts. If you sort this one, the phase, if you plot this one, if you resort this one, and plot the phase variation, the harmonics also change. This when you stabilize this, and then the harmonic spectrum does not change much. If you sort this one by phase, now you can see the harmonic change from discrete harmonics to kind of continuum to harmonics. So there is certainly some kind of correlation, though this is still a rough data. We just saw that. The signature of this. So, okay, to summarize, I guess we convince you now we can at least stabilize grating-based CPA now in US, and hopefully we're also working on measuring the other second pulse, but again, the Milano group beat us, so we have to work hard to get more money from the funding agency to get even shorter pulses out of this polarization gating. So hopefully we'll get some good result sometime. Yeah.
Thank you. So how short pulses can you produce now?
Laser pulse or auto second pulse?
Auto second pulse.
Well, as I said, we have not measured the auto second pulse. We're still measuring the auto second pulse. Okay.
Yeah. But you are producing pulses.
Well, if you don't measure it, don't produce.
Okay. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, work in progress.